Earlham Sports.
This week, it's absolutely fascinating. I'm sure you've got loads of opinions. Still time to keep firing them in. Tweet at Earlham Sports. Always remember, it's your show every bit as much as it is ours. Keep us busy, keep engaged. But this week, it's going to be a fascinating one because we are talking about the men and indeed women who tell the narrative of sports, who provide life to those excellent images, the sports commentators, the reporters, the people who really, for many, entice us in, eke out a love for sport. Our favourite sports commentators and reporters all time is this week's topic. As always, I know you've got a million opinions. Is it a John Motson for you? Is it going to be a Murray Walker? Who is it? Who's your fave? Get involved. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Really want to hear from you. But I'm delighted this week to be hearing from the man, the legend, the returning machine, Jason McKenna. Jason, welcome back, and how on earth are you?
I'm great, Tony. Always great to be talking about Verulam Sports stuff and talking about what the community wants to know. This week, it is the best commentators of all time. I don't think we've made it onto the list, though, there, Tony, or GG as well. I think, you know, when he talks about the mighty Saints, he does a damn good job. But in terms of it as well, people can tune in all season to our chats about the Saints, the live broadcast. But bringing it home to what the people have said, social media put up quite a few different names. Martin Tyler and John Motson from the world of football. Mm-hmm. Richie Benaud from cricket. We've got Ray Warren mm-hmm. from rugby and Gordon Bray. Stephen Coffino from basketball and Dick Enberg from NFL. I think there's some names in there that I recognise and you recognise as well there, Tony. Any that you want to open out upon from the social media community suggestions?
Yeah, do you know what? Some great shouts, one of whom I will really drill into a bit later on. Looking forward to this, a real icon. But some great names there. Surprising, though, there was one of the guys referenced from the world of NFL. Surprise, no reference for John Madden, who, again, was such an icon. Even the name these days continues, even if you're not really into NFL. Madden, of course, is synonymous with the eponymous Madden NFL game, which continues bearing his name even after his death a few years ago. He was a great player, a great coach, but an even better broadcaster. That voice, it was so unique and just so raw. And his passion and knowledge for NFL unsurpassed even to this day. Surprised his name didn't feature. Some great names in there. Looking forward indeed to kind of dissecting through them all, and always appreciate your involvement. Remember, do keep involved. Tweet at Verulam Sports. Each and every single week, we are debating a topic of your calling. And I know even after this show is done, you're still going to want to get engaged with your favorite commentators. I mean, look, how can we? They just capture the moments, don't they? You know, you just think back. We did a few weeks ago a discussion on 75 years of sporting memories, which, of course, had to include the iconic 1966 England World Cup win on home turf. And, of course, I think we may, in a few weeks, be considering why on earth England haven't won any more since. But that's another chat for another day. But that day, that 1966 moment, was gloriously captured by the legendary Kenneth Walsingham with that iconic soundbite. The crowd are running onto the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now. I mean, it just breathes to life. An epic moment. So splendidly delivered. And the greats of commentary just make it look effortless. Our great GG, as you rightly say, unlucky not to feature, perhaps. But as you rightly say, Jason, make sure you are tuning into Saints coverage every home game at Clarence Park on the Listen Live, the red button function on the award-winning Radio Verulam website. Some great names from football in that social media list, Jason. And before we begin in earnest, our take on the greatest commentators all time, reminder to everybody to engage with us, not just generally, but specifically in our Premier League Predictions League. Each and every single week, we are making our own predictions in the Verulam Sports team on the results for the Premier League fixtures. It's dead easy. 3 points if you get the exact correct scoreline. You get 1 point if you get the right result, but maybe you're out by a few goals here or there. Nil point. Nothing in this game if you get it all wrong. But of course, I know. You at home, you're a sporting punditry commentary genius, aren't you? You get them right each and every single week without fail. Well, prove it to us. I know you do. Tweet us at Verulam Sport with your predictions each and every single week in the Premier League. As it stands, we're only two fixtures in. It's continuing on this weekend, but it's very tight in our prediction league. Our new recruit, Neil Stock, has 14 points. Check his podcast out with a wonderful Wayne Mardell. Great work there from our new recruit, Neil Stock, on 14 points at the moment. The man, the legend, the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin, has 17 points. Coming in at third at the moment, it's the man returning tonight, the machine, Jason McKenna, on 18. I'm currently in second place on 21 points. And the ace man, Matthew Turvey, currently leads on 23. But always, I know you do better than us. Put us to shame and test us. Tweet at Verulam Sport with your Premier League predictions all season long. Remember, 3 points for an exactly correct scoreline. 1 point if you get the right result, but yeah, maybe it's out by a goal or two. It's not going to happen for you, I know. And nil point, nothing at all, should you. And again, of course, it won't be you getting it wrong. Of course it won't be. But nil point, should you get it wrong. So get involved. Tweet at Verulam Sport with your Premier League predictions. Love to have you involved. But right now, Jason, I'm excited for this week's conversation. As I say, it is the commentator, it is the reporters that tell the narrative, that bring to life the wonderful world of sport that makes us all love and engage with sport. Who's number one on your list? Who are you bringing to the table just now?
Well, the first one that I am bringing this week, Tony, is actually Peter the Poet Drury. And he's somebody in the footballing world who's got a name as being one of the most gifted users of the English language when he comes to talking about football. And I would say that my love for his commentary started in the 2010 World Cup. This is the South Africa one, the first one on the African continent. And, you know, a lot of people wrote off South Africa, and unfortunately they didn't really progress further into the tournament. But, yeah, there was this amazing, amazing moment in terms of commentary. And this is trademark Peter Drury. So with the 2010 World Cup, 58th minute, Tshabalala ignited the tournament in the first game by firing South Africa ahead. It was a symbolic goal because South African football really hadn't been, you know, taken seriously coming up into it. And then Peter Drury's commentary was providing a really good iconic backdrop to it all. He says, goal, Bafana, Bafana, goal for South Africa, goal for all of Africa. And even just reliving those words bring up the hairs on the back of my neck because I just associate so many wonderful moments with him. And just since then, he's been commentating on the biggest and the best games. We're talking about World Cups, Champions League, FA Cups. He always knows how to tell the narrative, and frankly, I think he's one of the best kind of pure commentators on the day, because my second choice is a little bit different, but we'll move on to that one a little bit later. But I think the best ever Peter Drury commentary moment has to come in the Champions League a few seasons ago. Now, Barcelona are intertwined with the modern Champions League story, and they were well ahead of Roma when the Catalans came to Rome to try and beat the Romans on their home turf. And what a game it was. And in the dying minutes, the Greek centre-back Kostas Manolas rose and scored a header to give one of the best ever commentary moments of all time. You know, this is the thing with football. It creates these beautiful scripts, but Peter Drury embellished it even further. And a lot of people kind of asked whether Peter Drury had already written this, but he couldn't, because you can't predict what's going to happen in football. Barcelona were leading 4-1, and then the Greeks came back and crushed them. It was the Greek from Mount Olympus. There was so much wonderful mythology that Peter mixed in with there. And it's probably one of the best commentary moments of all time there. I know you mentioned that we think it's all over. Well, it is now. This has to rank up there with it, because it just surmised the moment, the fact that they pulled off the impossible, the unthinkable unfolds before our eyes, as Peter Drury said himself. Yeah, it makes the tears well up in your eyes once again, because his commentary, in opposition to many other moments in football, you know, people laugh at the likes of Michael Owen, who, I don't want to offend him because he is a legend of the game, fantastic player, but he doesn't embellish the story, whereas Peter Drury does. He is part of the experience. You would tune in just to listen to him because he's so wonderful and articulate, whereas individuals, the likes of Owen, kind of almost in certain instances spoil the affair. So Peter Drury adds to the narrative, and I think he has to be considered as one of the greatest. And kind of like Messi, Ronaldo at the moment, we are so lucky to be living in the world of Peter Drury in his commentary. I mean, are you very au fait with him yourself, Tony?
I mean, listen, as somebody who loves sport and massively appreciates the art of sports broadcasting, as I do, you know, I'm a big appreciator of Drury. I think you made a wonderful point there. Wonder what you'd like can add to this, though, because as well as that wonderful arc mentioned earlier, Madden, the now departed John Madden, and obviously he is firmly associated with the Madden NFL game. Football and sports and computer gaming. I'm not a big computer gamer myself, quite frankly, but it is such a booming industry. And of course, it opens up a population and a fan base who may not necessarily be always the, you know, your sports or your football fan. It's got that kind of broader appeal. And I know Drury provides commentary for quite a few games, I think, for Pro Evolution Soccer and a few others. So just your thoughts, Jason, on the way that his poetic craft has found a new audience in the world of computer gaming.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all, because Peter's ability transcends any sport, and I suppose it may take him a while to get used to it, but he's the master of the narrative, and it goes quite often in instinct. He's obviously a very well-educated individual and can kind of make these links with stories, with meta-narratives, because it's not just about what's happening on the day, it's about the larger story and bringing it to life. So I'm not actually surprised at all with Peter Drury. The problem for me, obviously, with commentary on games is it's not realistic, in the sense that there's no real drama. Like, if he was commentating somebody playing, like, live, you know, if I had him actually commentating my game live, then I'd probably feel a bit infused and enthralled and probably a bit inspired in the moment. But the problem with games like FIFA, Madden, NFL, or, you know, the MMA games, the commentary's there, but it doesn't add to the experience. I mean, quite often when I play those games, I actually switch off the commentary because I think that there's no real embellishment to my playing experience. Because at the end of the day, what can the computer actually, until AI progresses to a level that it can actually analyze and put these things together? Yeah, it's a shame, because I think Peter Drury's talent is so, so good. I'm not surprised he's involved, but I just don't think that computer game in-game commentary is that interesting to me, because I think, yeah, what can they add to it?
Maybe not quite there yet, but interesting, like I say, that he has got that almost pop culture appeal. And again, I think that's a real reflection, Jason, of what you state. I don't think he's necessarily yet, though, become what I would call the voice of football. Many people's heads, that would maybe still be a John Motson. In my era, going back a little bit before that, it's, you know, a Barry Davis. From Sky's perspective, one of our great social media engagers, certainly not necessarily the voice of football, but certainly the voice of the Premier League, Martin Tyler, Aguero and all that, you know. And, you know, like I say, I admire Peter Drury. As you say, he's a poet as much as a great aficionado of football. But I don't think yet I think it may be with a drawery that'll be a body of work that he develops when he kind of gets into that category, that stratosphere, the voice of. But you're dead right, Jason. You made a wonderful case for him, and he is one of the finest exponents of the art and craft of commentary. And I tell you honestly, I've done it myself, and you're sitting at home, you're watching football or whatever, and it just sounds so easy. But to do it for 90 minutes, to have the ability to completely be in sync with the rhythm of a game, which of course in football can change in a heartbeat, to have the ability to just entertainingly engage for such a long period of time is a massive, massive art. I've got so much utter admiration and respect for everybody who is a professional broadcaster, particularly from the sports slant. It isn't easy, and Drury is a master. There's no questions about it. Moving on though now to my first selection, certainly one of those who would have been considered the voice of his sport, one of the earlier shouts from our great social media engagement. And always remember, your show, every bit as much as ours. So keep involved. Your favourite sports commentators, your favourite sports sound bites from commentators. Love to hear from you. Tweet at Verulam Sports. But this one was referenced earlier in the piece today, and it is the legend that is, or was, I should say, Richie Benno. Born October 1930, passing away in April 2015. Jason, one of the great discussions I'm sure that's going to come out very soon in tonight's conversation is the relationship, the dichotomy between what actually makes a great commentator. As I say, we've discussed and I've experienced just how very hard it is, and very few people can do it well. But in many ways, it kind of falls into two camps. Those who are ex-pros, who kind of almost provide what in America they refer to as an analytical perspective from the lived experience. And then the drawery type character, who is essentially, just like you and I and many of those listeners, just a massive fan of football, sport in general too, I'm sure, who made it such that it was his life's dream and vision and, you know, career. So they have to obviously build their own credibility with wider knowledge, filling in the gaps, etc., etc. And I guess operates essentially as the play-by-play type of mechanic, if that makes sense, right? Now, Richie Benno, for me, is just a wonderful amalgamation of both, because so many people will associate, you'll hear that such a unique voice of Richie Benno's, and his voice was his gift. But my goodness me, he was a mega player. I mean, seriously, a mega player in his day. 63 tests for Australia, racking up in excess of 2,000 runs at an average of pushing 25. Pretty good, because he was an all-rounder, but very much coming in at number 8, sometimes even number 9. We're talking at the lower end of the kind of wagging tail, if that makes sense, from the cricket vernacular. As a devastating wicket taker and a master proponent of the art of wrist spin, he's many ways kind of inspired the likes of Shane Warne and so many others. He claimed 248 wickets throughout his 63 tests. Now, at the time, that was a world record when he retired from international cricket in 1964. Oh, sorry, he retired, I think, internationally at 61. His career wound up in 64. So we're talking credibility, we're talking lived experience. He lived it at the absolute elite of the elite level, and was actually a captain of Australia from 1958 until he retired in 64, as I say, 64, his international retirement. So his acumen of cricket from a playing experience as a captain too is stratospheric. His cricketing IQ is borderline unparalleled. He really was that astute. Indeed, a great writer on the game of cricket, Gideon Haig, referred to Richie Benno as perhaps the most influential cricketer and cricket personality since the Second World War. But then to make the transition into broadcasting, and again, that just sublime voice and tone was so special. And he was, it's not just me saying this, he is, if you talk to people in and around cricket, and then you ask them who is the voice of cricket, they say, there isn't at the moment, there is only Richie Beno. He is that good. And it was always a real kind of nice focused trajectory that he took to become that voice of cricket. After a 1956 Ashes tour to England, he actually remained in London and took up a BBC presenter's training course. He actually made his first radio commentary for the BBC in 1960, whilst he was still a player, coming very much towards the twilight of his awesome playing days. And then when he officially retired in 64, he, as I say, just segued super smoothly into full-time commentary. And it was just a natural and obvious move for him. And one, as I say, that seemed to have formed part of a bigger plan, a bigger project that he was working towards. So again, that cerebral nature kind of manifested itself throughout his life. I must say, I should dearly have loved to have engaged with him. Obviously, never going to have that opportunity. But I do salute Richie Beno, because he just was an absolute wizard, both as a player, but again, the man who was able to breathe life into wonderful moments. Of course, the 1981 Ashes, which was Beefy's Ashes and all that. The ball of the century, delivered by, in many ways, his protege, the aforementioned Shane Warne, which in many cricketers' memories will never be forgotten. But he played in or commentated on well over 500 test matches in an amazing, stellar career. He died at 84 back in 2014, but his legacy will live on. Awarded an OBE in his career. He was inducted into Sport Australia's Hall of Fame in 1985. And in 2007, was also inducted into the ICC Cricket Hall of Fame. A true legend, a true great, one of the finest exponents of the very tricky art of commentary across all sports. Richie Beno, I salute you. You are one of the most inspirational voices that I've ever heard, and your knowledge was unsurpassed, and you have been a tremendous influence on me, and I know countless others. So Richie Beno, true icon. Just quickly, I wonder, Jason, your thoughts on that?
Well, Richie Beno was an all-rounder on the pitch or the cricket field, and he was off the field as well. I mean, what a seriously talented individual. And like you said, you know, the quotes that you had there, people kind of compared him possibly next to Don Bradman as one of the greatest kind of individuals impacting on cricket. It's amazing to have those individuals, and you feel humbled to even experience listening to them. And like you said there, it's a shame that, you know, you'll never get to chat to them now, because you're in awe of these individuals. But what I would also say with these kind of individuals, and bringing it back to my point about Peter Drury, what you find with a lot of these commentators, the best ones, are they just love the sport. And they're quite modest, and they always say, it's not me that's bringing the best out in the sport, it's the sport bringing the best out of me. And I think Richie Beno would say that as well, because, you know...
Do you know what's such a good point, Jason? I really appreciate that. But again, it's almost like an artist and its palette. They need that, you know, the great moments, again, that Kenneth Wilson home won and so many others. But then they are the artists, if you would, who paint that picture and really bring it to life. And that, for me, is why I'm so thrilled. And thank you again for this opportunity for the listeners to have this conversation. But so thrilled to be analysing commentators, because, you know, it is so hard. And it's one of those, isn't it? You know, when you watch a Messi or a great footballer or, you know, whatever, it's just so natural, so easy, so effortless, that almost it gives the impression to the layman that, well, you know, anybody could do this. Well, sure, theoretically, anybody can kick a football. But, you know, do you necessarily going to have that ability to do these deft things that make us awed in the moment under pressure? And it's the same principle. And that's, as you say, the underlying thrust for all of these greats, and there are so many that we're not even going to have a chance to dissect, unfortunately, is that what unites them, whether they're a player, ex-player, ex-pro, or, you know, a purist, or the, you know, from a journalistic stance, whatever the background, to a man, to a woman, united by a sheer love for sport or the sport that they commentate on. And of course, it's then that which comes across and builds the sport, captures those moments that we all love, and keeps the whole thing going. They are so integral to the world of sport, and that's why I love it. And it's been great to have this chat, but we've got to keep it moving. Who's up next, Jason?
Well, I just wanted to actually kind of open out a little bit the point that you highlighted a little bit earlier about the difference between ex-pros and professional analysts, because there's an interesting fine line. And obviously with Peter Drury, I mentioned Michael Owen, but there's many others out there that I feel are in the industry of commentating or talking and analysing matches just because of who they were and not because they actually add to the experience. And what we have there is, you know, Peter Drury, who's come in to this kind of almost sacrosanct and holy circle of football, which is really, really hard to break. And then Richie Burnell, you know, was a fantastic cricketer in his own right. And so he almost had a divine right to ascend into the commentary box and talk from there. And I think sometimes it is sad to see that you have the likes of just these ex-pros who they have to do something. And I think the life of being an ex-pro must be hard because you've got the limelight one week and then nothing from the next. But I would also say that just because you were a good footballer doesn't give you the credentials to then be talking about and analysing football. So where do you think, you know, maybe a checklist of being a good commentator is, Tony?
Brilliant question. Again, I invite you to share your views on this. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. I think it's about being authentic for me in anything. And, you know, the great voices, as I say, I don't think Drury yet has reached that echelon that certainly my next one and definitely Richie Benaud achieved, the voice of. Because they get that moniker because their passion, their enthusiasm is embodied with not just a kind of craft, because my goodness me, all of these great, great sports commentators will work tirelessly for hours on end. Granted, it's what they love. But to know the players, know the heritage of the players, know the form of the teams, all of these kind of background facts and stats, right, will be part of the toolkit of any good commentator. But the thing is that unites those that raise up to that elite level, that highest level, quote unquote, the voice of, you know, a Sid Waddell in darts, a poet himself, you know, a Murray in Murray Walker in F1. Surprised you didn't pick a Murray Walker instantly, the machine, Jason McKenna. Again, so many others. It's when they have their unique voice. And it's not my place to disparage anybody who is a professional in this very competitive and incredibly challenging world. But those who are the masters at what they do not only have the love for it, they're not just doing it to pay the bills. That's almost, incidental. But they have that authentic voice. They talk about the sport with a perspective which that is unique to them, right? For me, that is the single kind of key goal of anybody who has any aspirations to entering into this field. Now, I agree with you. I don't think that just because you are an ex-pro, that means that you necessarily have a perspective that you are able to engage with the audience. But I do believe that ex-pros have that kind of insider knowledge, which, you know, a Drury, you and I, even a great GG, and listen to him live or see on the Saints commentary, can have. You know, it's gone beyond the abstract. It's from living experience. But if they're not able to convert that and explain that element articulately, eloquently, and in a way that's going to kind of resonate, not just to the kind of sporting geek, but the average fan, then all of a sudden, all that advantages of being an ex-pro is null and void. So for me, Jason, it's a wonderful question. Again, please do get involved. And I will always reaffirm from experience just how challenging providing live commentary on any sport is. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. There isn't a divine right for an ex-pro to believe that means that they will translate into being a great commentator or a pundit or what have you. But I do believe that when it is done well, because of that experience and that IQ from lived experience, it does elevate. And that's why I think, like, mostly in England, in England sporting culture, we have it. We certainly definitely have it in the States, where there is almost a play-by-play commentator and then sort of the ex-pro providing the kind of deconstruction of the play, of the movement, or the goal, or whatever it might be, right? I think that's kind of tandem works best, but that's just an opinion. No, you've got yours. Tweet at Verulam Sports. Keep involved, but keeping things moving on. Machine Jason McKinnon. I know that it's not going to be Murray Walker. So surprised that it wasn't. Many times the voice of F1 now dearly departed, but who on earth is your next pick for us?
Well, kind of also answering that question, for me, a good commentator is somebody that tells me what's happening and why, or they add to the experience. And I ask myself the question, if you can listen without them and nothing changes, then they aren't a good commentator. And well, this individual here, if he wasn't commentating or telling me about a match, I would feel really sad. In fact, I tune in to Monday Night Football with his partnership with Jamie Carragher just for that analysis. And this, the person that I picked is Gary Neville, because I think he started something very different with the footballing analysis in the game. He's gone really tactical, really data driven, and kind of really given a good insight into games, mm-hmm. again with Jamie Carragher. There's been an improvement in tactical analysis amongst players, and I think he's now set the bar really high. And the comparisons with other ex-pros now is, are they like Carragher and Neville? I think, again, you described there, some of the best commentators have a really good duo. And there's the banter that they have between the two of them. You know, the famous Jamie Carragher quote of, nobody wants to grow up to be Gary Neville. Things like that just really bring out the fun in watching the football. But like I said, the Monday Night Football experience is so brilliant, and they often bring on a manager as well. And obviously, Gary Neville, unfortunately, wasn't very... he didn't do well in his only stint as being a manager. But what I would say as well is, even though he failed or didn't have a good time, I think failure is a very harsh word because of contextualizing what goes on at Valencia. But because... just because he wasn't fortunate there doesn't negate what he can add in analysing the game. What I love is seeing him explain why certain players are doing this, doing that, kind of seeing their runs or seeing not seeing their runs, explaining the game to the layperson in such terms that it doesn't insult your intelligence, but at the same time, it's easy for anybody and everybody to understand. But what I also like with the story of Gary Neville is, again, it's comparable to us, the layperson, because initially he wasn't actually very comfortable with commentary. In fact, he was actually going to give up the ghost. The kind of famous Barcelona Torres goal, where Torres scored in the Champions League, sent Chelsea through to the final against all odds. And Gary Neville actually gives the in an interview the experience that he wasn't being himself, and this is something that you pointed out brilliantly, Tony. He wasn't being genuine, and when he kind of analysed his games, he was comparing himself to the likes of maybe Motson or other greats and thinking, I've got to be like that. And instead, post that, I'm not sure if he was talked to by somebody or if he just realised that himself, he realised, if I'm going to be good at commentary, I have to be Gary Neville. And that's why I really Absolutely. Value those moments with Jamie Carragher as well, because the banter there is real, what you'd have in the dressing room between two players that did, you know, play alongside each other in England. Those are real moments, bringing out the real moments in football as well.
So, almost as much fun as Machine McKenna and Tony Rice podcasting and sportcasting every Saturday at 92.6 FM. Hey, Mr. McKenna.
Well, I tell you what, next one is going to be really fun, because next week's one, I think, will be a real firework display, because I think we'll have very interesting diverging opinions on the England matter. But yeah, the comparison is there, because obviously you and I have worked well with each other. We know each other's foibles, and we do have the good banter on air. I'm the machine, I'm the tactical, like, data-driven one, and you've got the other side of the argument as well, which GG embellishes with his mm-hmm. own experiences as an ex-pro himself. And yeah, this is why I love Gary Neville, because he's the mix. He's probably the epitome of what I want. He's got that ex-pro experience, but he's also a fantastic commentator, and he's got good use of language. Like I said, he can really explain the beautiful game to anybody and everybody. And so for me, Gary Neville is one of the best, if not the best, kind of Premier League commentator at the moment, because he makes the game accessible to anybody. Mm-hmm.
And I think he's come at a real important moment as we are embracing new technologies and kind of without using technology for technology's sake or data for data's sake. But he really has kind of embraced this and found a way to use these tools, as you explained, so well, so smoothly, that it does have that connection. And he doesn't just ram stats in our face, but he uses them to enhance the narrative that's being expressed on the pitch. And that relationship with Carragher, absolutely fantastic. Everything you'd want from a legend from the Red Devils, and of course a Liverpool legend. So many great sporting commentary double duos, though. Reminiscent in many ways. I'm sure this is before your time, might be before some of those listeners' times, but the great Saints and Greavy show was phenomenal. Ian St. John, another Liverpool legend, and Jimmy Greaves. And they had this ability, again, way, we're talking like late 70s, 80s into the early 90s. So way before sort of, VAR was, imagined, way before we had sort of instant replays to the nth degree and all the modern technology that we appreciate. But just their understanding of the beautiful game was so supreme. But more importantly, it was their relationship that was so special. And I just believe that this relationship between Carragher and Gary Neville is only going to continue to flourish. And Jimmy Greaves and Ian St. John, Saint and Greaves as they were known, actually were so iconic that they were immortalized in via spitting image. So spitting image actually kind of did a pastiche using their imagery, classically. And I can just imagine, I know Spitting Image has come back 360 and is back on our screens very soon. I can well imagine that a Carragher and a Gary Neville are ripe for that kind of very friendly pastiching, if that makes sense, because they just have this wonderful dynamic together, which is totally true and authentic. And they are a real jewel in the crown of the kind of sports analytic world. Great, great shout there. I am supremely excited now to tell you my final and most important commentator in my own life. I think anybody who's listened to me over the years on Radio Verulam appreciates that I am a massive, massive lover of sport in pretty much all its forms, its guises, across so many, many, many sports. Quite simply, I am super passionate about sport. That's why I'm honoured and privileged to do what I do on Radio Verulam and, on, of course, now Verulam Sport Podcasting. But, of course, I think it's also quite clear that my earlier influences was very much from the world of rugby union. And this man, this gentleman, who again, a la to Richie Benno, I should dearly have loved to have met, the voice of rugby for me always is Bill McLaren. I mean, I just love this guy. I love this guy so much that, you know, you have these kind of conversations sometimes when you're with your friends and, or, you know, when you're just getting to know people. It's, you know, if you could just have three people throughout history to have a dinner party, who would you be? Who would your three be? And I'll tell you what, again, that's going to be contingent on mood and, you know, what's currently influencing you and all these kind of things, right? Bill McLaren for me is a constant, an absolute constant. He is, I think, one of the most influential people in my life. I know, again, before streaming, before even DVDs, there was this crazy thing called VHS or videos. And as a kid, you know, I used to literally get up every morning at like 6 o'clock in the morning and watch and study a video by Bill McLaren called Bill's Best Bits, right? And it was just rugby clips going back to the 50s when he began up to present day. And back in those present day, we're talking like, you know, late 80s, early 90s kind of time. I mean, literally, that video I watched so many times that I think I literally destroyed it. Bill's Best Bits. And quite frankly, Bill was one of the best bits in my life. No questions about it. He's revered as the voice of rugby. And we're talking earlier, passion and joy for the game and a poetic style. And he just oozed all of that. In fact, almost uniquely, genuinely, and I know this is a very subjective, and I know everybody's going to have their own particulars and totally get that. I can only represent my own view here. I would actually assert that Bill McLaren is the finest sports commentator all time, all sports. Again, my own opinion, but he's just truly got it. We're talking authenticity. We're talking understanding of the game. We're talking just ability to put you there. He just got it. I mean, some of his immortal lines will just live on throughout history. Pausing as I debated internally whether I'd do the accent, I'm not going to bother. But just check these out on YouTube or just find Bill McLaren. I'm sure there's a DVD or a streaming version of Bill's Best Bits. You won't go wrong. Seriously, but just check these out. They're immortal lines. They'll be dancing in the streets of Howick tonight. And Howick is replaceable with wherever he was, or that Howick was very true to his heart, dear to his heart, where he grew up. But, you know, he used that line many, many times. But just to capture that moment, that celebration, there is dancing in the streets, isn't there, when your team is victorious? Whether that's in Liverpool or whether that's in, you know, Taranaki in New Zealand, it doesn't matter. There are dancing in the streets, literally, when your team is victorious. And he just resonates. I can just hear his voice, and I love this man. Describing the phenomenal Welsh winger from the 70s, Gerald Davis. And check this out for just a beautiful way that you can create an image with your words that just resonates, that just builds the picture. His sidestep was marvellous, like a shaft of lightning. Just, I can't do better than that. Bill, honestly, I salute you. You're a legend. And then describing Jonah Lomu, who, of course, even, you know, the non-rugby fan will know the name Jonah Lomu. Bill would say, "I'm no hod carrier, but I'd be laying bricks if he was running at me." Just nailed it. Bill, you nailed it. I would be the same. And, you know, just I mean, the list is endless. He's got so many, but they're just a few choice ones that I picked out from a career, a body of work, which was inspiring, sensational, and actually elevating and just iconic. As a youngster, Bill McLaren was immersed into rugby folklore, in particular from his beloved Howick. Again, they were dancing in the streets of Howick tonight, where his heroes inspired him. They included the likes of Willie Welsh, Jack Beattie, and Jerry Foster. And it was his love of Howick that was extended and kind of cultivated through his father, that kind of got that real father-son bonding that caused and crafted a wonderful career. Bill himself would later go on to don the famous Howick jersey, the green jersey of Howick. He was. We talked earlier, haven't we, Jason, about that relationship between an ex-player, not a pro, because this is way back when. Rugby was only professional in 95. And we're going back into the kind of late 40s, early 50s here. But he was a useful player, a really good flanker. He was actually on the verge of earning a Scotland cap before, sadly, but I would say weirdly, and I'll explain, wonderfully, he contracted TB, tuberculosis, in 1947. Now, obviously, that's a tragic thing, but it was through this disease that took him on the path to becoming the voice of rugby, to becoming the man, one of the men who's inspired me more than anybody else in life, and one of the most iconic proponents of the wonderful art of commentary. So, again, if it don't kill you, it'll make you stronger, and he's living proof of that. Yeah, it was in 1947 he contracted TB. And again, a pivotal moment in his life, because it was whilst convalescing in hospital that he actually began his broadcasting career by providing commentary on table tennis games for the hospital radio. So it just goes to show you, listening in, you know, if you're listening and you're inspired by this and you think you could be the next Bill, get involved here at Verum Sport. We'd love to engage with you. Tweet us at Verum Sport, and it just shows you where you can take your life with passion and focus and dedication. From commentating on hospital radio, on table tennis, to the voice of rugby. Bill McLaren, you truly inspire me. He was actually a student of physical education at Aberdeen and actually taught PE right up until 1987. He would actually coach some youngsters who progress into Scottish rugby legends. These include Jim Renwick, Colin Deans and Tony Stanger, Scotland icons, all three. It was back in 1953 in which the voice of rugby made his national debut for BBC Radio, commentating on Scotland's 12-0 defeat to Wales. He would make the switch to TV 6 years later in 1959. Ultimately, it's not just me eulogising about Bill McLaren, but so many people revere and respect him. So loved in the rugby fraternity was Bill. In November 2001, he became the first non-international. So again, he was on the cusp of that Scotland cap, remember, pre-TB, but never actually represented Scotland. So the first non-international to be inducted into the International Rugby Hall of Fame. He was recognised with an OBE in 1995 and then a CBE in 2003. Bill, so inspired to me, and I know so many others. He died at the age of 86 back in 2010. And in March of that year, thousands of people would flock to a memorial celebration held appropriately enough at the home of Scottish rugby, Murrayfield. He has a statue in his honour unveiled at Witton Park, home of Howick Rugby Club. And another statue of the great man is in the main reception area of Murrayfield. Again, just a reflection of this guy's gravitas and his legacy. It isn't just the great work that he did behind the mic. He has helped form and forge the Bill McLaren Foundation, which goes on strong. And this was set up with the man who really understood the spirit of rugby. And it's designed, the Bill McLaren Foundation is designed to develop and promote rugby union, but also sporting opportunities across the world. For the world of sports commentary, for me and my two pennies, there ain't no finer than Bill's best bits. Bill McLaren, I salute you. True hero for me.
Now, what I love there, Tony, just kind of, you know, obviously we're doing this over Zoom, so I can actually see your face as well. Obviously, the listeners won't be able to see the absolute joy, almost boyhood, childish joy of you reliving your memories there. Those moments, you know, I'm sure the listeners can hear it in your voice. You were back in the moment because you could hear his voice as well. And that is the sign of a true commentator for me. The voice is intertwined with the image. It would not be that moment without that commentary above it. And I suppose on a personal note there, Tony, Was the 2002 his final game, Wales Scotland, was that like a really emotional moment for you? Was that an end of an era? Bill's best bit no longer?
Listen, it was a moment, and I guess it just proves to us all that all good things come to an end. And he couldn't go on forever. Of course, he couldn't. But, you know, again, we're speaking in terms of this kind of revered tones, the voice of. There's no debate. He is still the voice of rugby. Nobody's come close. Sky have got great workers in Miles Harrison, and I have massive admiration for Stuart Barnes. And there are so many great pros in the game at the moment. But there ain't no Bill. There ain't no Bill. And there won't ever be another Bill McLaren. And again, that's coming back to what we were talking about, maybe the key driver and the emblem of all great sports commentators is that authenticity, that voice. And he just had that. And it was just a lifelong passion. He loved it. He truly, truly loved it. And as I say, I know it's massively subjective and there isn't any kind of real rhyme or reason and there's no right answer. But he is, for me, the barometer by which I judge all sports commentators. And, you know, just truly magnificent. But of course, that's just my two pennies. And of course, I recall fondly Bill's best bits. But for you and your two pennies, who is the best sports commentator? Maybe we've missed somebody. We've referenced Sid Waddell and Murray Walker. We've alluded to John Motson, but we haven't drilled into them. Who have we missed out? Who should have been included? I know you've got opinions. I'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Jason, just I guess want to sweep things back to this kind of interrelationship between the art and the poetry of the commentator's art and then the craft element of the knowledge and the data to feed into that. I think the best of the best do that so neatly. But is there, do you think there is a propensity these days to be hyper-reliant on a quality of data? Or, you know, maybe am I being a little bit too nostalgic for times gone past? Just quickly, your thoughts currently on the overall state of the commentary industry.
I mean, for me, as I said, the checklist of being a good commentator is telling me what is happening and why, so that everybody can experience it. And I think using data, if it's used wisely, is so useful for helping the narrative to explain exactly what is happening. But to the same extent, nothing kind of beats adding that to what you see on the eye, because sport is all about what is happening visually and sometimes with the sound as well. Whether you're in the stadium listening to it or if you're at home watching it and listening to this commentary. So I think there's no separation now. And the fact that there's been an advent and a real revolution with data analysis, I think the two can't be separated. And obviously you're yearning for a more classical style of commentary. But I think now it has to be there. Otherwise, you're doing a disservice to the listener, to the viewer, to your consumer, if you don't put data in there, because otherwise you're missing a key jigsaw puzzle piece to help them understand what is going on. So while I would say that data shouldn't be the be-all and end-all, and I never would, because there's things that you can only see on the pitch yourself or with psychology as well, which can't even be observed either visually or orally, but to the same extent, you have to have a dedication and an absolute fixation on what is best for the listener and for the viewer. So I think data has to be there, Tony.
Oh, listen, I wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, just coming back to my man, Bill, you know, he was assiduous in his preparation. And we're talking like, you know, this is going back way before the technology tools that enrich our data understanding. We were talking like, you know, this guy would know where people were born, where their grandparents were born, you know, who they played for, their weights. And he was just full of facts and factoids that he would pepper in to his commentary. And he would spend hours and hours assiduously preparing this. And he had an elephantine memory. as well, which was a great gift. So I love data. I find it compelling. I think it's vital. And as you say, given our modern world and the tools that we've got to break things down and deconstruct, it's there to stay. And I'm not at all sad that that is the case. But for me as well, we are enriched by the commentators who use it to enhance, but then don't lose that kind of romance of the sport and use the sport to tell the story. And as I say, there's this wonderful relationship between the palette, the stuff going on the pitch or what have you, and then the voice of the commentator to paint those pictures. And so many do it so well. And as I say, they're great gift. And this goes across the board, Their greatest gift is that it appears so easy. And I know you listening could do it yourself and you're the next John Motson. Well, let me tell you, it ain't as easy as it sounds. But always, again, I want your views on all things sports commentary. Get your views in early as to why it is the case that England haven't yet won another trophy since that immortal line in the great year 66, Ken Wolstenholme, another iconic commentator. I think it's all over. It is now. Well, it is now, sadly, all over for this week's Verulam Sport podcast. But we'll be back, of course, with another one next week. Keep involved, keep well, keep safe, and thanks for listening.